Hi, my name is Jeff Gretz of the band Zeo and numerous other groups. You're listening to my chapter of As the Story Grows.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
I am being realistic.
As the story grows.
You got this, Travis. Make him wait for it. Boom.
I want to talk about the new EP, but I definitely I want to do that towards the end. I definitely want to talk about the gigantic leap that Zeo took in forming Observed Observer, and give me the backstory and how it worked out. And if financials are none of anybody's business, then please don't give me any. But by all means, if you're willing to get into numbers and how this stuff works and everything, tell us what it's like to start a label in the day and age of record labels are stupid.
Well, it's because record labels are stupid. To us, that's the only option, is to start our own. I mean, we went into it thinking that when we were working on the new material, we thought at best, we're going to find someone, we're going to record the whole thing. We're going to have everything ready to go. And we'll see if there's a label that wants to put it out. But we're going to have to operate on a different way than we used to, because that's how most of the labels are working now anyway. A lot of the labels are asking bands to fund their own recordings. And the trade-off is the label deals are working a lot different now, where there's a lot more like 50-50 type deals going on, where it's like, you record your record, we'll manufacture it, and then we'll split all the profits 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
Like, 'cause it looks at like each half of the equation is in this together, and that's fine. And we were totally willing to do that. So we started out that we're like, we're going to record a record on our own and find someone to do that. And if no one does, we think we can do it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So let's test the waters. And we used that, that first 7-inch is testing the water. We're like, is there any interest here? So we basically set it up. We're like, okay, we're pretty sure that we can sell 1,000 copies of anything we do. Like that. And that was an extremely conservative number. We're like, we think we can do 1,000 copies. In all reality, I thought we can do 5,000 of anything we do. But I'm like, safely, we can do 1,000. There's 1,000 diehards that will buy anything Zeo puts out.
Okay.
So let's make 600. So we just kept knocking it down. Like, the idea was like, let's make this thing, and if we deal in small numbers, we can make it a little bit more personal, a little bit more like boutique-y and collector, and it sort of tests the waters. I thought when we did that Xenophobe 7-inch that we would eventually unload them over a course of like 6 months. And I'm like, if we unload these, it's enough money that we can basically pay for, you know, finishing the recording costs.
Like, and, to cover the, and what happened in reality?
We unloaded them in like 24 hours.
if I mean, sold out within a day.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
So then
do you recalibrate your whole plan and go back to the drawing board and go,
we never factored in the digital aspect and like that. We were just looking at the physical, like it costs this much to press the 7-inch. It's going to cost this much to make it. We need to sell X number. If we sold half of them, we made our investment back. And then the other half were the quote unquote profit. So if we sold 300, and it stopped there. We weren't out anything. So it ended up being like, okay, this works great. So we took all the money from the 7-inch and filtered it into finishing off the record. And then we shopped it. We actually tried. We had a couple different labels people at labels that we knew that were like, we really want to talk to the powers that be and bring you in. Enough time has passed. I mean, Nuclear Blast we thought was a lock. We thought the record was going to come out on Nuclear Blast. That was pretty solid. It got shut off at the last minute.
Why is that?
The head of Nuclear Blast over in Germany said that Zao doesn't have enough of a European presence. So the whole thing tanked. Even though we were offering them a completed record, like you don't have to do anything, just like literally make them and put them out there. They'll sell. But yeah, the head of the Germany, I don't blame, he's not wrong. You know, the head of Nuclear Blast Germany, who's the final say, he's not wrong. There's not enough. I totally understand. It's why we don't really have a European distributor right now, because it's so expensive to send records over there.
Right.
And there's really not that, there's not enough over there to justify. I mean, I see the digital, you know, the iTunes and the Spotify country, you know, the breakdown by country, and mm-hmm. it's respectable, but nah, I'd say like 90% of even the digital listeners are in the US. So it's like, all right. Relapse was also another one that we would have considered working with, and mm-hmm. it just didn't work out for various reasons. I think they do it by committee. Like there, like certain people have to, enough people have to like vote that they want to do it. And it wasn't a big deal. I mean, we weren't insulted. We understand. Sure. And then we started getting some smaller labels coming after us. And then it was just like, if we're going to do that, like if we're going to do it with a smaller label, that's not like, I totally think that either Nuclear Blast or Relapse would have been a good fit and would have really helped just get the records out there a little bit more, but maybe not. I don't know. They might have done this exact same thing. Like, I don't know.
This entire thing sounds like, yeah, probably could have, maybe, perhaps, probably not. I don't know. No, I have no idea. Right. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like
We didn't care. Yeah, we were just like, screw it. And even then when it came down to doing Well-Intentioned Virus, like when I looked at the number, I mean, the recording and everything was already paid for. All we had to do was press the vinyl and the CDs.
Mm-hmm.
So when I looked at all the recording was paid for out of the 7-inch and like the t-shirt stuff. Like we weren't taking any, quote unquote royalties from any of the Holy Mountain t-shirts or any of the stuff that happened with the 7-inch. It was all going into making the album.
Mm-hmm.
So we weren't really, none of us were out of pocket to record Virus. So when it came time to put it out, when I looked at the numbers, I'm like, we can do like a really cool packaging and do all this stuff with it. And if we sell out of the white vinyl, like the 1,000 white vinyl, then we're good.
Wait a minute. None of you were out of pocket. Somebody had to put the money down.
Well, that's what I mean. Like we were doing, No, because the 7-inch was the initial money for the 7-inch came from a bunch of old merch that we had from old tours.
Okay.
That we unloaded. And that was what started the whole ball. Like okay. We just kept doing these like little things and building up the bank account and then reinvesting them. We only had to pay to mix two songs to finish the 7-inch. And then when the 7-inch came out, we then paid the studio to finish off mixing the stuff for Virus.
Mm-hmm.
When Virus came out, we took the first batch of profits from Virus and threw them back at the studio again to mix the stuff for this EP. We keep rolling money over into the next project.
Right. And then you guys keep like you guys keep money from like live performances and stuff is when you, yeah. that's your take home.
Yeah.
Nobody takes home from album sales.
Yeah. Yeah. The first priority of any, we started taking a little bit from Virus after the first priority of anything we put out now is to fund the next thing.
Okay. All right.
I'm going in to record drums for another 15 songs in a couple weeks that will probably be the next two releases that come out. So the first money from this EP is now getting rolled over into the next album.
How about that? We're talking about the new Zayo EP, and Jeff is going in a couple weeks to record drums for the next two Zayo releases.
Yes.
So Zayo is still a thing. We're still, ball's still rolling.
There you
go. Cool.
I mean, we pretty much have it set up that our risk, the general risk is low. If we have our hit point, like we have to sell this many copies, mm-hmm. and then if we sell that many copies, bare minimum, usually the limited vinyl, whatever the color is, that's our base, and then the next batch that comes in determines whether we do another one.
Mm-hmm. And so far, so good. Seems to be working.
Yeah. Like I said, we're not becoming millionaires over this, but we're surviving.
Right.
You know, maybe thousandaires.
Right. Thousandaires. Multi-thousandaires. Ooh. Is Observed Observer, as of right now, exclusively Zayo's label for Zayo's releases, or is you ever looking to expand and start to invest in other bands?
I don't know. I mean, that's the whole thing. It really, and I don't kid myself, the only reason it's working is because it's Zayo.
Right.
Like, Zayo's in a really unique spot with mm-hmm. the fan base and the history and the amount of time that the name's been out there. I don't know that I could do this with a new band.
Right. Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if it works. Like, I mean, I try it. I've run into some of these issues with Emmanuel Nafir, or, you know, like, it's like, man, it's really hard to get people to notice a new band.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if just with the people that have over the years know through the industry and stuff, maybe if I brought a new band on and I was like pitching it to some of the, you know, whether it was the magazines or the websites that we have good relationships with, maybe I could get them a little bit more traction than they could get on their own. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if I'm ready to start putting time in to do that. Right. I mean, maybe eventually.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could totally see Observed Observer maybe being a house for the other members, other things.
Oh, okay. All right. Like,
if that makes sense, like if Scott or Dan were doing something else and right. wanted to put it out under that, or Marty was doing, like, that would be a different story.
Sure.
Like,
right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's get into it. Let's talk about this new EP.
All right. What do you want to know?
Nothing. No, I'm kidding. starting off with just the, how do you pronounce the title of it? It's freaking Dan and his titles, right?
Pyrrhic.
Pyrrhic Victory.
Yes.
What do you know lyrically about some of the songs and the story behind Pyrrhic Victory? Or is that more of a Dan conversation?
Actually, I do know. I do know generally what's going on.
I know you do. I'm leading you. So.
Yeah.
I'm being a good journalist.
Mean, you're doing a bang up job, man.
I have
man.
No friggin' idea what I'm doing. So anyway, tell us a little bit about like where the EP is coming from. You kind of explained a little bit about how it's not the songs that didn't fit on Virus, time wise, but it kind of was the ones that were chosen that could have been a part of Virus, but were clumped together because of a little bit of a stylistic angle difference and that kind of, like, explain how this is all going to tie together, because there is a walking theme here between the artwork for Virus, the artwork on your beer, and now the EP. Like, just tie this whole thing together for us.
Yeah. I mean,
I know I threw a lot at you.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, we knew all of these songs that we recorded from that big batch of material were eventually going to get heard.
Okay.
I was not about to make a double record. So then it just became, how do we compartmentalize these things out? And like I said, any of these songs could have been on Virus. It just didn't work out that way. And then it got to the point where we're like, okay, let's take these ones that are a little bit more immediate and direct. Not as like broad or like epic sounding and just sort of like throw them together. I think the artwork thing came later. We just decided to start tying it together.
Mm-hmm.
just because we had Curly on board. But yeah, I mean, it's just, how do you tie these, you know, they all, like all the lyrics and stuff were written in the same time frame. So Dan was on a lot of the same, trips.
Mm-hmm.
So it just kind of, yeah. I mean, I was perfectly prepared to like start looking for a new cover artist. I thought we were just going to do something else. And Dan's like, no, Matt wants to do something. We have this idea. We're going to continue the story of what was going on with the skeleton guy who we call Leg Bones now.
Leg Bones.
Leg Bones is his unofficial, sort of semi-official name.
Well, if you're officially putting that out there, I want to officially be the first person to tell you guys that's a horrible name.
Well, it came from my son.
Oh, can I take that back? Now I feel bad.
I don't know. My son started calling him Leg Bones.
it just like, got cool. You know,
I have all the records here in my house. You know, like I have a bunch of records here, and like I was putting the cassettes together and all that stuff. And my son would help me. Like he was putting the download codes in the cassettes, and we were shrink wrapping them and stuff.
Oh, right on.
And my son was calling them Leg Bones, and then I told Scott that my son was calling him Leg Bones, and then Dan started calling him Leg Bones.
And that's that.
And then we told Matt Curley, and now Matt was, when we were talking to Matt about what we were doing with the artist, like, we were thinking about like having Leg Bones, like grabbing the witch and like feeding her the cup.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
It's just easier than saying, yeah, the weird skeleton guy. Like,
right. No, Leg Bones is now a cool name. What's your son's name?
James.
James. We just saw pictures of James playing your drums on Facebook. Kid's adorable.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, that's funny. No, I feel like a dick.
No, don't, no, no, no,
tell
no,
James
no.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah, Leg Bones is a stupid name. Like, that's why we really didn't throw it out there.
But, right.
But yeah, so I mean, it just sort of happened. Like, you know, we're like, well, let's get Matt to do another one. And like Dan had an idea and he talked with Matt about it. And then we're like, all right, we'll just tie everything together. And that's when we went and did the reissue of the 7-inch. We're like, well, let's get Matt. Let's use Matt's art for that too. Mm-hmm. So basically everything, all the releases from that batch of recording we did are now all under the umbrella of like the Matt Curley.
Yeah.
Imagery.
And it's very thematic and it's so cool. Such great stuff, man. It really is.
Yeah. I mean, the general idea of the Pyrrhic victory is like, you know, it's like you won, but at what cost?
Got it.
And it's like on the virus cover, you know, the witch is burning on the stake. And you have Leg Bones popping out of the ground, holding the chalice. Then, like now on the cover, he's like feeding her the chalice, and you're like, mm-hmm. Well, "What's going on here?"
Right.
And then, like when you open it up and you see the image from the beer, the witch is now turned into Leg Bones. It's like he transformed her. And the idea, the simple idea is like he's what's in the cup is actually like a horrible truth. Like he's like feeding her like a truth and like sort of like the answer, like here's the secret, the answer here's the truth, all of it. But you know, the idea is like when you actually find out the answer or what it's all about, you might not exactly be thrilled with it.
Was it worth it? Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very Matrix. Is it very red pill versus blue pill.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us about some of the songs. Well, there's only five, so tell us about all five of the songs.
Well, we have Drifting Shadows and Walking Dreams starts it off.
That you already had that
was
right. Okay.
Yeah, this is a slightly cleaned up mix, all new master, which is basically, I think Dan had talked about it briefly before. It's one of his sort of panic attack songs.
Mm-hmm.
It's about he has had issues over the years with panic attacks. I think he's got a a much better grasp on it now.
Okay.
But these particular ones are about specific panic attacks that he has, like, while he's sleeping. He actually has, like, sleeping panic attacks.
Yeah.
Like, the way they... And it's sort of about, like, how they affect his dreams and all that kind of stuff. No, but like I said, that was the closest song that all... I mean, it was down to the wire, almost made it on Virus.
Mm.
I mean, the only reason that... I mean, like I said, it didn't fit, but also we were, like, time-wise, it, like, knocked it into the point where the vinyl would have sounded like shit.
Right.
Like, just too long. And I just couldn't find a good spot for it. Anywhere we put it in the song order, like, that was always the one that was problematic to slot in there.
Hmm. Okay. So now it's the lead of this EP. So that I mean, it worked out. Whatever.
That one also had very specific... the guitars and bass and the vocals weren't recorded for the other four yet.
Okay.
So there was different guitar tones and bass tones on the other four songs. So it was almost a technical thought of leading off with it.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Because if you put Drifting Shadows after any of the other songs, it might have been more perceptive to the listener that, whoa, these guitar tones are a little different.
Got it. But if you
lead off with it, you don't notice it.
And I did not. Very sneaky. Pretty sneaky, sis. All right. Yep. Track two.
Gifts of Flowers and Stone. This is one of my favorites. This is the one song I don't want to go too far into because I know – I mean the general gist is it has to do with Dan's kids, his son and daughter. The general idea, like based on the title, as he said, like he'd take his son and daughter out to play. And his daughter would go around and gather – when they were outside, would gather up flowers. And he noticed that his son – would always gather up rocks. Like, this was like a thing that, like, there was, it just started doing it by instinct. And then they would come over and hand them to Dan. And he always was fascinated by the fact that, you know, my daughter's gathering flowers and my son's gathering stones. And their whole intention is they're gifts, but they had their own individual, individual thought process into what they were gathering.
That's amazing.
And he said they just did it on their own. And his son at the time was only one. So mm-hmm. he's like, I don't know. You know, he was just fascinated with, like, what are their thought processes here? Like, why is he attracted to rocks? Why is she attracted to stones? But I think lyrically that was like the imagery that started. But he said it goes off into other – just the ideas of how you're affected, like – how your perception of the world is affected by looking at it through the eyes of a parent.
Wow.
Like you start to notice these types of things when you're thinking like a dad, when you're thinking like a parent.
Yeah. And don't you, I mean, isn't that exactly true? Man, do things change. That's really cool.
And this is the one that this is one of those songs. That's like, it's real straightforward to me. It's almost like kind of like a punk song in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't sound like punk rock, but it like has that like really immediate raw, like, sure. not a lot of atmospherics or, you know, some of the ambience that was on Virus, which is kind of a running theme on these songs. They're just a lot more direct.
Okay. All right. Clawing, never cutting through.
Yeah, this song was tricky. This song was the closest to anything we did that probably almost got scrapped. We had a lot of issues with this song. We just couldn't figure out what to do with it. The original version that I track drums to is probably the closest thing on the song that we did to like editing work on.
Hmm.
And like not in the sense of like fixing like drum notes or like getting into like production editing like that. The song was a lot longer and structured a lot different. And we just couldn't figure out what to do with it. And like we would say to Dave, our engineer, we're like, hey, can you like from 1 minute and 5 seconds up through 1 minute and 45 seconds, could you just chop that completely out? can we hear that? And like there was this, and then we extended something at the end. Like we just didn't know what to do with it. And then like it sounded weird without vocals on it. And then when Dan sang over it, there were parts he sang over we weren't expecting.
Mm-hmm.
And then parts he left open, and then that like changed things. So this was the closest thing to like a hatchet job. Where we like literally like cut, there was like a guitar, there was a whole like verse or bridge music section that just got completely scrapped. I ended up really happy with it. But mm-hmm. Yeah, this song really isn't a performance beginning to end that you're listening to.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Lyrically, this is the first time in a long time where I'm like, Dan, what are you singing about? And he's like, I just started messing around with just different phrases and visual imagery.
Hmm.
Like it's a lot of like just sort of abstract kind of like images and concepts strung together. And then he said that as he got into it, though, as you get later in the song, it just sort of just addressing like it's sort of like what we did on Virus, where he's addressing like obsessions with the past and romanticizing history and, you know, that kind of stuff. But it's a weird one.
Mm-hmm.
It's our avant-garde song in a way.
Got to have that one weird one in the middle to make everybody scratch their head a little.
Yeah.
Track 4, The Host Has Bared Its Teeth. I just say, this is probably, you know how Mellinger has that like kind of, I listen to a lot of Zeppelin bluesy metal vibe in him without it being like Southern Fried Pantera. He fits in that niche somewhere.
Absolutely.
This is one of my favorite riffs that he has written. It is so catchy. I can't sing along with Dan. Dan does not have a catchy voice. And I find myself hurting myself when I try to duplicate what he does when I'm in the car by myself. But I walked around humming this guitar riff forever after I heard it. It just stuck like peanut butter on the brain, as they say.
I always liked this song. This song in particular was one of the closest times that Scott and I had in the writing spot where we almost had like kind of a like blowout. We did not agree on how to approach this song.
Okay.
I always liked it. I don't think he was crazy about it. He never pushed for it to be in the Virus order. I did, and he just kind of ignored me and didn't finish the guitars on it. But no, I
passive aggressive. I don't want it on. I just won't finish it.
yeah. When we made the list of the stuff that were actually being finished up for Virus, this was on my list. And then when it came back, and it's like, oh, here's all the finished, here's all the songs that were finished up with like guitars and vocals and stuff. And I'm like, where's at the time this song was called Crazed. That was its working title.
Okay.
I'm like, where's Crazed at? It's like, oh, I didn't get to that one. Well, we'll do that later. Now I really wanted this one on Virus. But I approached it completely different from the drums.
Hmm.
When we were in the demo phase, I had a totally different groove on the drums. It's a lot more tom heavy, like kind of like how Jimba Atai was on Virus.
Okay.
But Scott was not having it. And I remember I sent it to him and it was really funny. Like, he kind of got into a panic mode when he heard what I was doing. So it was like one of the first things I sent, and he literally called me. He's like, "Do you even know how to play drums?"
Sounds like Scott.
And I'm just like, you don't like it? He's like, "No, I don't like what you did. I don't like you to do it." What I did was kind of weird. It was a lot more in the Dale Crover, Melvins kind of world.
Do you still have it?
I don't remember.
Send it to me. I will tell you if you can play drums or not. I want to hear this. I want to hear this other variation of it. Do you even know how to play drums? That's funny. It's totally sounds.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It was totally funny. But I was like, "No, dude, it's just an idea. Don't worry about it. We'll fix it." And we did. It was fine.
What's this one about?
Basically, the Dan's kind of concept is like a parasite essentially needs a host to survive, but the host doesn't necessarily need the parasite. It's like a one way transaction.
Sure.
As soon as the host, if the host starts to like be affected by the parasite's existence, it will, you know, react and wipe out the parasite.
Mm-hmm.
My general take on that is basically lately, if you turn on the Weather Channel, the host has become aware of the parasite. Like, the general idea is like when people say like, "Oh, well, we're destroying the Earth." No, we're not destroying the Earth. The Earth has been here long before us.
We're pissing it off.
The Earth will be here long after us. The Earth does not need us.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, we're destroying our existence on the Earth. The Earth is going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to be perfectly fine. So basically, the host has bared its teeth.
Mm-hmm.
It's starting to shake us off.
Here's a true story. When Scott first sent me this stuff, I'm an exterminator. I deal with pests. Yeah. I was having a horrible time at an apartment complex with a particular breed of dog fleas.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't take care of these things. Now, when you do an apartment, I have to treat that apartment. I can't treat all the surrounding apartments because it's other people's property. Like, I can't. Yeah. Until the apartment complex says, yes, treat all these surrounding ones. Think of it as like Hollywood Squares. If the problem's in the middle, it could affect upper left, lower right, right? So I'm in there, and I'm treating, and I'm humming along about how the Earth could shake us off like fleas and that kind of thing. And I'm kind of laughing. Yeah. I'm laughing to myself because I'm like, yeah, it's funny. He sent me a song about fleas. I'm dealing with fleas right now. I can't get rid of the freaking things. And it turned out one of the adjacent apartments was had like an animal abuse thing going where they absolutely were letting this poor little dog just be overtaken.
Oh man.
And that was the host, right? Yeah. And they had to get deeper involved, and that was that. And it doesn't line up as much as it is just coincidence and the fleas, and it's almost kind of tongue in cheek funny. But the host was in the apartment next to me producing It was hosting the problem, and all I'm doing is picking them off in the next room, basically. Yeah. Essentially is what I'm doing. And I just couldn't get rid of these damn things. And then once they eliminated the source, once that dog got taken away from those people that weren't taking care of it, and the dog was dipped and taken care of properly, hey, look at that. Problem went away.
Yeah.
Eliminate the source. And I just thought it was a funny parallel how at the same time this song made me think about climate control and all the other hoopla that's going on with like you're saying, how we're ruining the Earth. Eventually we're going to ruin ourselves. We haven't even broken through the skin of this apple yet, and it'll be fine. Earth will be fine.
They're, like I said, the Earth isn't going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not going anywhere, but we might. And that's, it's sort of, it's like I said, it very much ties in lyrically to, that's kind of the idea with you know, the well-intentioned virus, like,
right.
We're, you know, like the humanity of the virus, like. So, yeah, like, and that's what's funny is because I really wanted this on the record, and lyrically it really fits in with Virus. So, it's getting its due. And ironically, as much as I got resistance from Scott on this song, initially he loves it now. Like, this is being added into the, you know, the live set, and it's the first song that's premiering from the record.
Yep.
Everyone came around on it once it got done. Now, so it's getting its due. If it would have been on Virus, it probably wouldn't have been featured the way it's being featured now. Everything happens for a reason.
I'm glad it's getting the singular attention that it's getting. I think it deserves it.
And this song actually goes back to the Awake era. I think this is one of the first songs he sent me after we did Awake.
Wow, really?
Actually, all of these, except for Drifting Shadows, which is, I think, also subconsciously why these got held aside, that they were technically the oldest of the batch.
Man, these other than Drifting Shadows, these four songs are pushing 7 years old?
Yeah, and same with Fear Itself off the 7-inch was from that initial batch. And so was Weeping Vessel, Apocalypse, and I think the song Observed Observer. I think those were the initial batch. Wow. That were dated back to, like, I actually got, he gave me a CDR of demos of songs. We were still waiting for Awake to come out. Mm-hmm. That's how old these were.
Track 5, Heated Pain. Let's wrap this thing up.
Ooh, this is every Zaya record has that one song where you're like, wow, this is going to get people mad. Feed It Pain is that one.
Okay. Why?
It basically, the song is sort of a loose critique on the idea that it's about, like, essentially the suffering of children. It's about basically bringing a life into the world, and that's kind of like the lyrical theme that's running through it. Like, give it life and then feed it pain, and it just keeps building on this theme. The short answer is it's like a lot of the same people that are like, oh, well, pro-life. Tend to forget about that life once it's born. Hmm. The idea, and it started with, you know, like the idea of like the child refugees. It's like, okay, you're supposed to be like, aren't we here to help? And like, we care about these children and it's all about the children, but we feel like there's a whole subset of people that care about the child until it's born. And then it's kind of left on its own. It's like, where's the charity now? Why are we stopping? Like, we're putting all our energy into the anti-abortion pro-life basket, and then it seems like, where is the church once they exist? Yeah.
yeah, that'll do it.
I mean, I think the initial, and there's a couple lines where dancing, it's like innocence breeze below the waves is one of the lines. And I think what sparked a lot of that, from what I've gathered from Dan, is there was recently, there were, I forget exactly what the story was, but there were images of like refugee children that were like washing up on the beach, like where they were like literally trying to escape. And like there was like this footage of like these child's, you know, corpses like washing up on the beach, that like these refugees are like going through everything they can do to escape, and then we're here arguing about like why should we take refugees in,
right?
And it's just like, yeah, we're, because everyone's like, oh, but what about the, you know, what about these terrorists, what about, just like, no, we're talking about children here, like,
right,
come on, like, where's the,
right?
Yeah, it's, I mean, I can't do it as much justice as Dan would do.
I understand. But. Yeah, I know. I put you in a position to explain somebody else's thoughts, but I mean,
yeah, I got you on the phone, so I get it. I don't know how deep we want to go yet, and how much you want to leave it there.
Fair enough.
I mean, it's like, but at the same time, it's like a lot of times Dan writes these lyrics based on images, and it's like you get this really strong image and you roll with it, and it's not always as, you know, politically inclined as you think. It's just like throwing the thought. A lot of times it's just throwing the thought out there.
Right.
You know, we still to this day, and we kind of quit playing it because it's the song Tool to Scream. Everyone kind of got the wrong idea about. Like, everyone's always said, like, oh, yeah, Tool to Scream is a pro-life song. And it really kind of isn't. Like, the story with that song that Dan always told me was it was about, like, there was, like, this video footage that was floating around of a, you know, fetus in utero, like, when they were actually performing the abortion, and it looked like it screamed. And, like, that was what he wrote that song based off of, that image.
Mm-hmm.
But it was never really intended to necessarily be a pro-life song. It was just about that image. It was about that, you know, like we always, you know, pretty much in the Zayo camp, you know, we've talked about this before. It's like, you can be pro-choice and still be anti-abortion.
Sure.
Like, and everybody's like on this, it's like this black and white thing.
Yeah.
Like, I could be like, you know what? I am pro-choice. I don't think it's my place to say. I'm a man. What the fuck do I have to say?
Right.
Like, I should have no input on this.
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily mean if I was confronted with the position where I had to be given that, you know, I had to make that decision, I don't think I could do it. I don't think I could be personally involved.
I gotcha.
You know, you know what I mean? Like, that's the thing. It's like,
I do.
It doesn't have to be black and white.
Right.
And that's kind of, you know, that's kind of how a lot of us roll. But yeah, that song, I'm sure Dan will have to give some interviews about that one. But you know what? We always think that. We thought, you know, they thought that there was going to be a lot more flack for the Funeral of God title. We thought that American Sheets on the Deathbed or It's Hard Enough to Shake with a Gun in Your Mouth were going to get us in trouble. We thought, What Will You Find? If Awake was going to get us in trouble. We thought I Leave You in Peace was going to get us in trouble. A Virus. And it's just, whatever.
Whatever.
I think most of the Zayo fans at this point have kind of ridden with Zayo to this point.
I'd like to think so. I mean, I know Scott still says on occasion he still gets these messages from people of like how disheartening it is that everybody's changed their tune and that kind of, oh God, oh my, like still, and just do you, man. Dan's got some pressure he needs to get out with some of these thoughts that he has, and lyrically, if that's going to piss everybody off, then don't listen. There's seven.
Like I said, nothing's really changed.
There's 7 billion bands out there. If someone's upsetting you, don't support them. Don't buy the album. Stop.
Yeah, nothing's stop really there. Changed. Either people weren't listening before to what was actually being said, a lot of times the band really couldn't say anything because the label wouldn't allow it.
Mm-hmm.
Dan said, but I know they said in the documentary, Dan said they used to have to make up stories about what the songs were about, because if they told Solid State what it was really about, they wouldn't put it out.
Forehead slap.
Yeah.
I think it's a good place to stop, Jeff. I really appreciate your time. Tell your wife and kid I appreciate you letting me steal you for 2 hours.
Hey, no problem.
Nice and clear.
As the Story Grows is a part of Lavera Productions.
High five. Follow me on Twitter and Facebook at As the Story Grows and visit the site at asthestorygrows.com. Make sure to subscribe to the show so you don't miss anything. Visit the Bandcamp link in the notes of this show for free cover songs, some free tunes, and merch. If you like what you heard and would like to help, there's a Patreon link on every episode, or you can look for the dollar sign on the website for one-time donations. If you can't afford to donate, that's totally okay. Tell a friend, retweet me, and give me a good rating on iTunes. Send your guest requests and any feedback for the show to asthestorygrows@gmail.com, and thank you so much for listening today.
As the story grows.
We love you. Take care. Bye-bye.